Success number 30,009, Mr. Fred Brett, Reel 2. Now, we're talking about your training with Colchester Barracks, badged to the beds and hearts, but, you know, not with them, but there. Now, from November 50 onwards, now, what other sorts of training might you do in the day?
Well, no, I can't think of much else. We've done PT, we've done marching and saluting and route marches. We've done all the normal things, you know, to get us fit, and we was fit when we finished training. There was no getting away from it.
Now, what about, how did you get on with the rest of the lads, you know? And if you want to talk about, you've done so many people, you meet in your time in the army, so many people that we have interviewed, that it's worth you telling us about them as individuals. How did you get on with generally with them when you first met them?
Well, a bit of luck. I knew two. We went together, three of us. So I knew two was in the same barracks.
Now, who were they?
That was Jack Kettridge and Bert Sabin.
Sabin. Now tell me about these two. What were they like?
They was... well, when you're in training, you get the best recruit. And it all came down to Jack and Bert. And it was an argument which one of them was going to get it. And I don't think it was fair, because Jack got it and Bert didn't. And the only reason was that Bert got issued South African boots, which was a lot more oily than the English ones. So they polished up on his best ones more. So Bert won it.
And what were they like as lads? Can you describe their characters? You know, just give us a sort of idea.
Well, it's always difficult. I mean... Me and Jack, we knew each other. I mean, we was kids together, like, you know, we knew each other. But I mean, he come from Ware, where we came from Hartford, and we knew each other when we used to play football and things like that. That's how we got to know each other. But when we went in, and that first night, oh dear, we had one, and he kept crying. And we named him Homer. And he got his name Homer all the way through the 2 years. It was a film what was on. We'd all seen this film at some time or another, and it was somebody, he looked a bit like this bloke called Homer. So we nicknamed him Homer, and he stuck to it. And as I say, when we was getting towards the end of the training for the inspection and so forth...
Now, hang on, I will come back to that. Now, what about the other lads? I mean, did you meet any others that you'd be with, you know...
Oh yes, I mean I was
well,
with
Jimmy, that we might know. Fred Brooks.
Oh, Joe, me and Joe.
Joe.
We
there then.
Yes, yeah, same lot, and we done our whole 2 years together, all the way through.
What was Joe Brooks like then? We have interviewed him.
Joe, a bit of a Londoner, and. He would always argue about bus numbers, what bus went so-and-so and so-and-so in London. And two or three of them was always arguing about bus numbers. And they'd done it all their bloody lives, or he was in Korea, all the time, arguing about which bus went where.
And you got on well with Joe?
Oh, Joe, yes.
Who else? We
still meet regularly, me and Joe. Arthur, well, I went in at the same time as Arthur Carter.
Arthur Carter.
Tell me about
him.
He's 2 to 3 years older than most of us, because Arthur stopped to finish his apprenticeship. And when we finished training, he got married before we went to Korea.
And what was he like then?
Arthur, very quiet. Very quiet chap. Very nice to know. You could never have a bad word said about Arthur. He wasn't quite the run-of-the-mill like me. And one or two more. It wasn't quite the run of the mill of that. Very nice.
Any other characters that stand out that you remember?
It was only later on, but okay. Not in the barracks.
Was there? It sounds like there was, but did you get on well with different classes? I mean, you've got this Warner with you as well, you know, potential officer. You've got. I mean, was there any bullying or any trouble between you all, or was it all pretty friendly?
I think it was all pretty friendly. And I'm frightened of no man or beast. Only the dentist. So I didn't have no trouble at all.
Did any of them have trouble?
I don't think so, not really.
Warner. How did you get on with Warner when you knew he was a potential officer?
I just took the mick, which we all did. And he'd done his training with us, and he got little special more privileges than what we got, as you might say. You know, if we got to do something extra, he didn't have to do it. And all them silly little things he got away with. But, yeah.
So, now, what about the NCOs? How did you get on with the, you know, the instructors?
Well, I thought I said the very first day. That little Lance Corporal, I found out what that stripe was, a little Lance Corporal. And he told me that, and I told him what to do. And I got 5 days jankers, and...
After that,
I just obeyed all orders. It came a lot easier.
What did you think of them?
Some of them were silly, some of the orders. Well, tell you to pick up that matchstick. No, I mean, there was one over there. Why didn't I pick that one up? You've got to pick that one up. I mean, silly things they tell you to do, you know. And I think they wanted you to retaliate.
Were they fair?
I think as you begin to get farther into your training, you begin to realise they are fair. There wasn't, I don't think many of them was really bullying or anything like that. It was just got to knock you into shape, which they done.
Did they know this stuff? I mean, you were a natural shot. Did they know what they were talking about with the
guns? I think they did. I think they'd all been done their training, and they was all pretty good at anything they taught you about, because you had different ones to teach you different things, and like the PTIs was very fit and very good. I like that, you know, the PTIs, that was, because that got me fit.
What about the officers? Did you see much of them at that stage?
No, I can remember when we had a lecture that who you salute in our training, and I can remember you don't salute the RSM, and me, Kettridge and Sabin was going to go out one Saturday, I think it was, and we were walking down, and the RSM's coming, and I said, I think that's the RSM. And they said, no, it's an officer. So them two saluted, and I didn't, and didn't the RSM tell them off? And I felt quite chuffed. It could have been the other way, though.
But you see, you didn't see much of the officers.
Not really, no, no.
Now, what would you do, you know, your training had ended up, did you do any tactical training at this time, you know, running about in fields and... pretending to attack, defend?
No, we didn't. No, no.
Now, what would you do in the evening then?
Well, as most of people tell you, that when you first go in, it takes you all evening to clean your kit each time.
Let's look at kitting. How would you prepare for a kit or parade in the inspector, you know, your room and your kit? How would you actually do it?
Well, most of us used to just clean it and do it as they told you. But when you got some of them, would get a table and put on top of their bed and cover it over with a blanket so it was perfectly square, and lay the kit out overnight and then sleep on the floor. And I thought they was balmy.
How would you say polish your boots? I mean, you know.
Well,
it's not like polishing you should normally.
No, you know, you rub it in with a polish, and some of us used a spoon, and some used the plastic handle of a toothbrush.
What for?
To get a real shine on the toe caps and that. And everyone mastered it, as far as I know. And the badges, I mean, I remember you used to get Blue Bell and pour the Blue Bell onto the badge and then set it alight. And then once it burnt out, you polish it and it used to come up very well. Yeah, I mean...
And what were kit inspections like?
Oh, some of them was terrible, really, because they've got to find a fault. They couldn't walk in a barracks and not find a fault. They've got to find a fault. And everyone knows you can find a fault in anything. The easiest job in the world is to find fault with something else. But they would be silly things, pick on one and tell you got to get that cleaned or that's not right. Well, they never really punish you all that much, really. They just picked out things to say, you know, you hadn't done it right. I got by, so it didn't bother me.
So how did the training go? What happened? I mean, how long was it for? Was this just a 6 weeks training?
It's just 6 weeks training.
That'd be what, into December?
Yes, we finished in December.
Now, what about passing out and things like that? You've got a story about the passing out, that lad, the young lad who was saying his prayers. Tell us that story.
When we passed out, I said to Warner about, ain't you on this? Oh, no, he said. No, he said. I passed all the fitness more than anything. That's all I'd got to do. I mean, he was well educated. I mean, a grammar school boy, because I knew him I was sighting Harvard, not as a friend. And he didn't have to do the same Parsnip parade as us. And I'll say, I think he finished up a brigadier. But,
yeah, but what about the... I thought you had a story about the inspection.
That's what I said about these tables, when they put them on top of the beds. They put them all there.
The bloke who was crying.
Oh, Homer. Oh, he used to cry. And I served all my time with him as well. Till he was in Korea.
I thought you had a story you wanted to tell about him on the night before.
Oh, when he kept crying. No, he always used to keep crying. He did for about 3 nights. He'd never been away from home. Terrible, you know, that there was one or two of them at home, but he kept it up about 3 nights. He wanted to go home.
So nothing particular happened to him on the night of the Pastor
Navarro? No, no, no.
So tell me about the Pastor Navarro. What was it like?
Oh, I think we was all very proud. When we had to get dressed properly and pass out, it was very good. Yeah,
what did you do?
Oh, we had to march and salute, and the officers was on parade, and the RSM there shouting out all the orders, and I think we all felt proud when we'd passed. I think everyone did. Like, you know, I don't care what they all said, but I think everyone was proud when we all passed out.
I should have asked you, were you ever, before the passing, were you ever allowed out, you know, into Colchester?
Yeah, we used to go into Colchester,
what
yeah.
What did you do when you went to Colchester?
Oh, we'd go to the pictures. I don't think we often went to the pub, really. We used to go to the pictures and walk about town. No, not really. Not in them days. No, I'd never really been a drinker.
So, pictures?
Yeah, I went to pictures and things like that. Walk around the town and have a look at the young ladies. Never to get lucky, but there you are.
Well, how did you get on with the locals? I mean, it's an army town. They're used to recruits,
I presume. Oh, they got used to it. I mean, I didn't drink. It's because before I went in the army, I mean, I played a hell of a lot of snooker. That was my misspent youth. I was in a snooker hall nearly every night. So that's why I didn't drink.
And you weren't able to play snooker in the army, I presume?
No, no, we never got anywhere near snooker table.
So what happened when you finished then? You finished in December. Where'd you go next then?
We had embarkation leave.
Now, tell me about that. What was embarkation leave like?
Well, we just came over for 2 weeks, and they'd already told us where we was going. And
now, where were you going?
To Trieste, in the North Ants.
And which battalion, the first?
Yes, yeah, at Rossetti Barracks.
Rossetti?
Yeah.
Now, so that you were going to do a first time Northampton route. Now, tell me about the embarkation leave. You got that in December into January, did it?
Or yeah, so 2nd of January, we had to report back 2nd of January, and then we got on a train.
Now, what do you do in the embarkation leave?
Well, nothing much. I only played snooker again. That's all I ever done.
What did your parents think of you going away?
Oh, yes, when we was in training, I mean, because I got there, and as I said, that Homer was crying, and I wasn't one of those, that they said we could go home within 2 weeks, for the weekend. In the meantime, because I hadn't bothered to phone my mother, she only phoned up the camp, and I had to go in front of the officer, and an officer had to sit with me while I started to write a letter home, because they said they wanted to see it. And when I started the letter, the officer said, oh, that's fair enough. Just give it to me when you're finished and I'll post it. Because I didn't think, you know, that I'd only give it away 2 weeks. I wasn't really going to bother, sort of thing. I'm going to come home for the weekend.
So you were expected to communicate with your...
Yes, so I found out. It didn't enter my head. I don't like writing letters too much now, do I, dear?
So, what about the voyage out, then?
Oh, and we started all from Colchester, and Jack Kettridge, he decided to write to his girlfriend. So he starts writing, and we got to Harwich, caught the ferry across, and on the train to Villach, and I think we was on the train about 36 hours, and Jack continued on writing until we got to Rossetti Barracks, and he'd wrote 28 pages to his girlfriend, and we couldn't make out how you could write 28 pages in that time. He had to post it in two envelopes.
It's a long time on the train.
Yeah. It was four to a carriage, two up, because you pulled the seats, beds down from the top, and you... Yes, it seems a long time now, but that's what it was. Approximately 36 hours on
and
that
this
train.
This was January 51?
Yep.
What were your first impressions of Rossetti Barracks then?
Oh,
what
it was...
Like?
All the windows were double glazed. We found out the reason why later. All the windows had, like, one set of windows, and you had a foot gap, and then the other set of windows.
Now, what was that?
It was for the borers, the winds, and they used to put a rope, like a barge rope, across the square if you wanted to go across, because 2 or 3 weeks a year you used to get what they call the borers, was the wind, and you had to hang on to the rope to get across the square. It used to blow buses and trams over, and it was terrible, the wind. And that's why they had the double windows there. And the very first day we got there, if you leant out one block the barracks, you could see the trotting. And the very first day, some bloke had leant out a bit too far and fell out and killed himself. That was the first day we got there.
A bit unusual. Did that cause trouble?
Well, we was only new recruits, so we didn't really know too much what was happening about it, and... we soon knew that the bloke fell out.
What were your first impressions of the 1st Battalion North, you know?
Well, the very first night we was allowed out, of course there was me and myself, Kettridge and Sabin. We walked around Trieste, done this, that and the other. And we came back into barracks. And one of my friends I went to school with, and that he was in before me, he came over and he said to me, "Fred, if anything goes wrong, 3rd Company toilet, C Company." "What's up, Frank?" "No, don't worry." So in the morning, Rivali goes, and I'm already up, and they wouldn't let me out. Nobody was allowed out, because I was always up for Rivali. I'm always up early. Kettridge and Sabin wake. Nobody was allowed out. And there's the CID. And they come round and expected everything we'd got there, like. And they took Kettridge's name. They took Sabin's name. They didn't take mine. And I said, "Well, we've been together all night." And they wouldn't take no notice. They took their two names. By lunchtime, we found out that my mate Frank and knocked off the C Company payroll with his mate. And they'd taken Kettridge and Sabin's name because they had crepe soles. And I had leather. And they soon got them. And they got... I think they got 18 months. Frank got more than his mate. It's because Frank rounded on his mate and told him who the other one was. So he got more punishment. And of course, but when we came out of the army, Frank, because I didn't see him no more after that, but Frank, when we came out, he got convicted of brought in as murder, fetched back in as manslaughter, and he hung himself in Wormwood Scrubs 2 days later in Wormwood Scrubs, because he said to the judge when he got 7 years, "I'll get you if it's the last thing I do," or a few choice words. He hung himself in Wormwood Scrubs.
So what were you doing when you got there? I mean, which company were you put into?
D Company.
And what was the reception like? You know, I mean, how did they treat you? Because you're coming in,
really, we got on very well. I mean, because it was all used to people having coming in all the time, different people. And I used to, like, every Wednesday, we had to go for a run cross country. And of course, my two mates again, Kettridge and Sabin, they was useless. And if you come in over 400, you had to run again on a Saturday. They always had to run on a Saturday. And I used to love running, and I could always come in the 20 to 40, always. And you had the better runners, them other 20, They were spaced out again behind us. And I think it was Lloyd was the real runner. And I used to wait for one of these 20 to come. And I would get behind them and think, I'll beat you today. But I never did. They gradually leave you behind. And I can remember one time that they used to count about the first 60 or 70, the markers. And I come and I said, how am I? And he said, oh, we gave up a long while ago. Too many in front of you. And when I come in, and they said, what number are you generally are? And I told them, all right. And I made a note that somebody had found out the run, and they'd hid, and they'd shortcut back in too soon. So they all got in a bit of a row. I don't remember that.
And what else were you doing? What sort of training were you doing? Because you were still under training, weren't you?
Oh, yes, yeah. We went to Azovica. That's where we'd done our shooting and everything up there.
So you carried on. Is that when they introduced you to the pit?
Yep, that's when they got the pit. And they was giving us instructions and this, that and the other. And I said...
Now, can you explain to them, it's not a well-known weapon now, what the pit was, how it worked, and what was it like to...
You had to stand on the butt to pull it, to load it.
Is it a spring then?
Yeah, and then you had to put like a shell in it, more than anything. And you put it onto your shoulder, and if you didn't hold it right, you could break your shoulder, just like that. And of course, they picked on me. They said, look, there's a chap that was just fire one, and I had to do it. And it had got a fair kick on it. And I can understand why they did, weren't too many to fire it. I had a fair old kick. It was, I suppose, the circumference of the barrel must have been about 3 to 4 inches. It must have been 4 foot long. Must have been. And wasn't all that heavy, not in my opinion, but it did have a kick. Yeah, I remember that.
And could you hit anything with it?
Well, it was to knock out tanks and so forth. Oh, yeah, you could hit a tank at a fair old range.
What range would you say?
I suppose I fired it at somewhere about 100 yards, I suppose, something like that.
Any other weapons you were introduced to then?
Later in life I was.
But not that. Mm-hmm. So what was a typical day like there? What was you doing at Recession Barracks? You know,
we'd done quite a few parades. Marching. I'd done a funeral. Which I had to stand all night because they'd found some sailors, what was from the Second World War, in a ship or something they'd got up, the Italians, and I remember doing a guard for that all night, standing there with your rifle upside down and one on each corner.
That must have been quite tough.
Oh, I think we've done 2 hours on and 4 off, you know, through the night. Yeah. But we've done a lot of training up Basavica and...
What kind? Did you do any tactical training?
Yes, we did up there, Dunaby.
Tell me about that. What sort of tactics were you employing? What were you doing?
Well, I suppose, you know, close combat. You know, more than anything, you know. Just learning to roll over and knock one another about. But wasn't too bad. I enjoyed it. We didn't do too much of that, really. It was mostly weapon training. I've done a lot of weapon training. And especially marching and...
But no, we're by tactical, I mean to the house.
And then came May the 1st. We had to parade in the morning. And they gave us all pick shafts. A lot. And I said, what? Because you're all inquisitive, why you got a pick shaft? And it was for May Day. Because they have trouble. Or quite likely to have trouble. So that night, we had to go out with our peck shafts and stand there, but we didn't have any trouble, so we was lucky. And whenever I see that film, you know, Clint Eastwood, you can't beat a good bit of hickory, I always think of that. Yeah, peck shaft. Yeah. And we done guards on an ammunition dump when we was there.
What did that involve?
That with fixed bayonets and just do 4 on and 4 off. Or 2 on, wasn't it? And 4 off all the time.
Anything ever happen?
Not to my knowledge. They tell me that one of them had fell out with one of the officers, what used to climb over and try to catch you out, that one of the hard cases, I didn't know him personally, when he started to climb over, stuck the bayonet in him.
Anything else? Any other duties you had? Or training?
Not in Trieste, I don't think, no.
How did you get on with it? Are they Italians or Yugoslavians? They argue about it, don't they?
It was belonged to Italy then. It was Italian. It was all right. I mean, all the cleaners and different staff in the barracks, which wasn't forces, they was all Italians. They was very nice, very polite. I never had no trouble with them. Very good.
Did you go out to the camp into...
Into Trieste, yeah. We were down there quite a lot.
What would you do down there?
And then when we was in Trieste, that was it, that we was... That must have been about... May, something like that, that was in Trieste, and now you can have a hockey match on the square. And I wanted to play there, I like sport, and they were short. So I said, myself and Kettridge were play, and Jack wasn't all that keen a sportsman, and he got hocked, something chronic. I enjoyed it. And about 2 weeks later, they said, I was looking for people who can ride a bike. And Kettridge turned around and said that Fred was one of the champions of Hertfordshire on a bike. Oh, we'll put his name down. What's your name? And I said, Kettridge, well, you can come as well. So we've got to ride this bike. It turned out to be a terrific skive that the battalion was taken by a truck to Villach in Austria, and going to march up to the mountains, trying to think of the name of it, Schmelz or something or the other, and they had to march across the snow in their KD. So, us for the push bikes, we push biked, there must be about 20 of us, we push biked from Trieste, right across the top of Italy, to Villach. And then when the battalion done, I think it was a 19-mile march, and they had to do it in 5 days, if I remember right, that we used to set off before the battalion marched and help the cooks to get the meal ready at nights. And I was always getting around me and Kettridge because we was last, and the court kept saying, what's happening? We said, we keep getting a puncher, our tyres are not too good. But we kept stopping and picking some of the grapes. And we was always lasting.
And what sort of training were you doing at Villach?
When we got up there, it was going to be all this combat stuff. But when we got up there, the very first night, the whole battalion's there now, then they said there was a draft going back to form the Norfolks. And two or three of my mates was going. And I said, I want to go. And they didn't know, but... After a bit of an argument, they said, yes, I could go. So we came back the next day, down in the cable cars, and travelled back to England.
How did you get back? By train again?
By train, and across, and we finished up at Cromer, I think. We went straight to Cromer.
And this is the first battalion, Royal North.
That's when they formed the full battalion again, yes. And it was Lieutenant Colonel Ollibar. And when we was all there, I will never forget that we all stood on parade. He introduced himself. And he said, as most of you know, that I lost a battalion in the Second World War. And I do not intend to lose this battalion. And you could hear all the chuckling saying, you're not going to lose me.
Well, did he make a good impression on you?
Ollibar?
Oliver,
yeah. He was, yes, I got on well with him, what I see of him. I did see him a couple of times, I can tell you, later on.
It's just whether he made a good impression as a colonel.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah. But he didn't seem to be a colonel to me, he was too short. I'd always got to imagine a colonel being big.
Was he very short then?
Well, I suppose he only stood about 5 foot 9, something like that, 10.
Well,